Blog Talk Radio.
Less detail of the podcast on a Wednesday night, January 8th, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and I'm fucked. I picked the Kansas City Chiefs for wildcard weekend. They were leading 38-10 and lost 45-44. I picked the Green Bay Packers to cover a 2.5-point spread as they were underdogs at home against the 49ers, and they managed to lose on the last play of the game, 23-20. It's amazing how I managed to pull these games out of my ass, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, setting Jason up in very good position to win the big championship this year, as he now enjoys a 14.8-point lead over me with not too many points left to go in the season. So, Jason, the floor is yours. I don't know if I have anything else to add to all the rest of the show.
Wow. Well, is this going to be like a couple of weeks ago now? Are you just going to just leave?
And I can just
let me solo this thing here? No, we've reached that point in the season where your biggest enemy and my biggest ally is just math. Just simple math. Because there's only so many points left, 25 to be exact. With almost a 15-point lead, it just simply, you know, I would have to almost lose every pick. There's a lot of picks I'd have to lose here. Because you figure this, you still have the ability to agree on some picks, but we always reach that point in the season where somebody becomes in the driver's seat and just has to start picking games correctly. Last few years, it's been the Super Bowl where we've had them, where it's gone into championship week. You still have that ability to play strategy, but your time is running out. The numbers aren't on your side. I'm not gloating. I can't claim a championship yet. You could still pull out an Andrew Luck on me. I could be the Chiefs for all we know. But that was one crazy game. I'm sorry. Your wife had some medical emergency. So I was supplying you with texts throughout the second half of that game. But at one point, you had tongue-in-cheek, I assumed it was tongue-in-cheek, put a post up on Twitter about how the Chiefs were just setting you up for the fall. And it's amazing that you could pick the game wrong but nail exactly the way it was going to go down, especially at halftime.
Yeah, there's no tongue-in-cheek about that.
It was like the farther the Chiefs got ahead, the worst you felt.
I knew. There's nothing tongue-in-cheek about it. I knew what the hell was going to happen. I told you on the show that I picked the Chiefs in order to knock that shit off, in order to put an end to the Kansas City Chiefs season. And that's exactly what was going to happen. They could have gone up 6,000-0. They were going to lose the game because I picked them. That's how it was going to work out, no matter what the score was. I had full confidence that Kansas City would find a way to lose that game. I was not the least bit surprised when you texted me while I'm sitting in the minor medical care center as my wife is getting worked on for whatever it is that she had. Gotten antibiotics for it. She seems to be doing a little better now, so for anyone that was wondering. And you texted back that the Colts had won the game. And actually, before you even did that, it's the NFL. You can't run. You can't hide. You can't avoid it. Some old man kept opening the damn door of this place in, 10-degree weather, going in and out of the door, and I honestly didn't know what he was doing. I thought he was nervous because maybe somebody that he cared for was there getting something done, and maybe he was just, couldn't stay still. And he finally comes in from out of the cold at one point, and tells some random guy that just happens to be sitting there in the place that has an NFL team's sweatshirt on, like a Patriots sweatshirt or something, tells this random guy who he appears to not know who he is from Joe Blow, hey, man, the Colts came back all the way and won that game. And the guy looks up at him and goes, no kidding. So literally 10 seconds before you texted me, somebody else had decided to spoil the outcome for me. Not that I was taping it and planning it to watch it later or anything like that, you know.
Well, that news just was going to hunt you down. I'm surprised Alex Smith didn't drive over there and tell you in person. Sorry, man. We blew it for you. It made it into my recap this week. But after the show last week, we dug into your record with the Chiefs because we suspected that it wasn't very good, because it just seemed like you went on this horrible run towards the end of the year where you jump on the bandwagon and you're running off the cliff, and then you jump off and I jump back on, and it's just like you couldn't, for just one team to be so just crazy. And early in the season, you know, you weren't on them as much, but you know, with this loss, that puts you at 4-13 with just the Chiefs, which is stunning. I mean, I'm sure if we actually dug through it team by team, I had a team that was, you know, hard to read, but to know it and to just have it go in your face like that, that was. I felt for you a little bit, but I was too busy being excited about the fact that I was at least on the right side of that one. That felt good. It was like just another one. I'd be shocked to see if we went back and looked at what my record with the Chiefs was, because it seemed like I just would be right on it, right about the time you'd be off, and back and forth, and it had to be maddening. I couldn't imagine what that was like going through.
Yeah, I presume you're like 12-4 with the Chiefs, but I didn't go back and look, but I can do that quickly later on. Yeah, week 11 was the last time I got the Chiefs right, when they came off their bye to go to Denver and get housed, which we both thought they were going to do. The difference is that you found a way to figure them out after that, and I just never got it right. I thought they would rebound against San Diego. I thought they would rebound at home against Denver. I thought they would, well, they're done now. They'll get killed by the Redskins and go liquidate the rest of their season. No. So just every time that they came up from the rest of the season on, I had it wrong. No matter what I picked, I got it wrong. It's just one of those years, one of those deals. It happens like that. And that's how I knew that Kansas City was going to find a way to lose that game, is because I just do not get them right. I didn't get them right. That's just how it worked. So what were your thoughts about that, the actual game? What could you possibly take away from such a crazy outcome?
Well, you know, to put the eulogy here for the Chiefs, so the one thing I did figure out, and again, I don't use any stats, but the one thing that I figured out and it kind of informed my picks with the Chiefs was that they played great defense against the scrubs. They looked incredible against the really bad teams, but anybody who was capable of hitting them a little or punching them in the mouth or putting up a lot of points, they struggled. So that defense was what, I mean, they gave up 45 points, and that's what people are going to look at. And nobody's going to look at the fact that they scored 44.
Right.
Crazy, but they scored 44 points. That's the game manager, Alex Smith, you can call him whatever you want. That team put up more than enough points to win the game. No way, with a 28-point lead a couple minutes into the third quarter after Andrew Luck had thrown another interception and the Chiefs capitalized on it. No way your defense should go on to give up, well, 35 second-half points. The Chiefs' defense is going to need some major work, because their offense, they did the job. They did exactly what they were supposed to do, even with backups. Even after Jamaal Charles got hurt, I thought, oh, geez, they're done. This is like Christmas
right now.
This couldn't be going any better for me.
was about to say, they put up 44 points missing their all-pro running back for every play of the damn game except for, like, three.
Yeah. Yeah. Their best offensive player was gone for almost the whole game, and they still managed to put up 44. But, of course, it's all going to be anti-Chiefs. I mean, everything I read into that game was all Chiefs. It was very hard to get a read on the Colts. Definitely. The other team I had a hard time getting a read on, it's a sort of a similar situation. Sometimes you worry more about the team that's falling apart and the team that's choking and not giving any credit to the team that actually won the game. And I have a real hard time giving a lot of credit to the Colts, and I also have a lot of hard time giving a lot of credit to the Chargers. So because I thought that they basically just capitalized, and we see this a lot in Wild Card Weekend, which is why it's very easy to get, you know, overexcited about a performance. Oh, the Colts, they came back and they scored 45 points and they did all that. But you have to be handed some of this. And, you know, the Colts were handed a lot of their prosperity, and the Chargers were also handed a lot of their prosperity. So those two teams for me are going to be the ones where their matchups going into this week that I'm going to have the most trouble with. So both of those AFC games, to me, in my mind, are just wide open. Not exactly sure where I'm going with those picks. A lot more confident on the NFC side right now.
Yeah, the Indy D did not stop Kansas City very much at all. That's, like you said, something a lot of people are going to overlook, that, you know, Kansas City did put up 44 points on the Indianapolis Colts. When it's all said and done, the Colts get the win. So, you know, they get the credit and they get the spotlight, except for maybe in Kansas City where they're looking at the Chiefs, you know, a little cross-eyed as they should be. What I took away from the game. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, if the Patriots are up 38-10 on whatever day they play this weekend, not going to be a big comeback. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. What I took away was I was surprised at how easily Kansas City moved the ball and got points, of course, without Jamaal Charles, Alex Smith showing that he can actually play quarterback, not just manage the game. Pretty impressive outing overall, you know, even with the collapse at the end. I talked about those Colts receivers, you know, not, you know, being a bunch of no names and not really giving me any confidence that Andrew Luck would be able to lead a comeback with them, and then Andrew Luck leads a comeback with them. But that T.Y. Hilton guy stood out more than all the rest of them. He put on an absolute show. That guy was unbelievable. He came into the season as, you know, a perfect number two type of receiver next to Reggie Wayne. And then when Reggie Wayne goes down, you look at him as the new number one, and you're like, well, I don't know. You know, he doesn't really have the body type of a number one receiver. Doesn't seem like he could take the pounding. But I don't know. Maybe he stepped up and decided to show that he's got number one receiver potential after all, because they needed something like that. Indy would not have come back if not for T.Y. Hilton having a monster game. It wasn't going to be, you know, Derek Rogers and Levon Brazil and all these other guys that was going to lead the comeback. As great as Andrew Luck is, he needed somebody else on the other end to be just as great as him on the, you know, on the receiving end of the ball, and T.Y. Hilton was that guy.
Yeah, we've reached the point now with this Andrew Luck orchestrating comebacks. This isn't Luck, so to speak. This is not. Just a random thing. This isn't a guy getting lucky. I mean, I hate to use that word because that's his name, but, you know, you can't keep doing this and earning this reputation. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that you think of as the all-time great comeback quarterbacks, and he's on his way to being on that list. And I mean, when you think of the comeback quarterbacks, I mean, you think of course of like Elway. Favre did a few, you know, you have some of those guys. I mean, for a while there, I remember Jake Plummer was king of the comeback. If you remember way back in those days, So, yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate into Super Bowl titles, but you kind of got that moxie, that thing. It's like you get down, but you're never out. And they definitely have that. With that complete lack of talent all across the board at the wide receiver position, you almost wonder how dangerous that team would be if they had a great stable of receivers, and they don't even really have much in the backfield. There's not a lot of running game there, so this is really a testament to how good Andrew Luck really is. So I will say something positive there for the Chiefs, because yes, he is very good, because he's doing a lot with not very much.
One more thing about the Chiefs and Alex Smith and Andy Reid. I'm sure they're probably getting a lot of controversy and criticism right now about how much they passed in the second half instead of running the ball out. Maybe they should have kept running. They were doing just fine passing the ball. You really only criticize a team that's in the lead passing the ball too much if the ball is getting dropped, if it's incomplete or getting turned over, intercepted or something. They were doing just fine moving the ball in the air. They didn't have any real resistance from the Colts throwing the ball. They still, managed to lose the lead because, they weren't perfect, but they weren't bad enough throwing the ball that I don't think they should be criticized for not running enough. They were doing just fine throwing. So New Orleans and Philadelphia in the nightcap Saturday night, where New Orleans pulls out the upset, gets their first road victory in the playoffs in the history of their franchise. What did you take away from that one?
Well, that was the perfect opportunity for the Saints to get that win. It was a really tough game. They didn't look like the Saints that you normally see, which is impressive in a way because they completely changed their style. And I think they knew they had to, so that is a testament to coaching. They turned into ground and pound. Drew Brees didn't have to go crazy through the air. He managed the game, didn't make the big mistake. And in the end, they just outlasted the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles took the lead with about 3 minutes left to go. The Saints, just like the 49ers did, just went on the long drive, moved the chains, very efficient, got down the field, didn't leave the time left, kicked the field goal, escaped out of town, end of story. So both NFC games felt very similar, very tight games. New Orleans did give up a pretty sizable lead. I want to say at one point they were up something to the tune of 20-7 or somewhere around there. So they had jumped up, and then they let the Eagles come back. But they did everything they needed to do. I don't know how that's going to translate or inform my pick as far as them going to Seattle, which is a completely different animal than it is playing in Philly against. I don't think you put Philly and Seattle on the same class, but it was the perfect chance for the Saints to kind of roll out what they might need to do next week. It really looked like a dress rehearsal, in my opinion, and they ended up getting the win, which for them is an added bonus.
Yeah, as you talk about the coaching, figuring out how to win differently than what New Orleans is used to doing, I think it's also Drew Brees himself, because they came out with a couple of deep attempts, and it didn't go very well at all. Drew Brees tried one for Darren Sproles, a deep attempt, and the ball just died. I mean, it came up 10 yards short of anywhere near Darren Sproles. He tried another long one to Kenny Stills, and got intercepted because it was nowhere near where Kenny Stills was supposed to be. I think Drew Brees figured it out himself as well as Sean Payton early on. Okay, we need to alter our game plan because this isn't going to really work in the cold or whatever, maybe it was windy. Whatever the situation was, long ball just wasn't going to happen, and they were going to have to rely on the run and rely on the short passing game, and that's exactly what they did. I think that running game threw Philadelphia off. You were talking about your X factor being Trent Cole. You thought that the Eagles were going to storm in and wreak havoc on Drew Brees because of that terrible blocking that New Orleans has had all year. Well, run blocking wasn't a problem in this game, and I think that may have thrown the Eagles off. I think they weren't really planning on, a lot of Mark Ingram and Darren Sproles and Kyrie Robinson. I don't think they had to that they thought they were going to have to deal with those guys, and they wound up dealing with them all night long and really never figured out how to stop them. And yeah, definitely a different way for Drew Brees and Sean Payton to get a win, but definitely a win nonetheless.
Right, and the Eagles never really, other than right up until the very last minutes there when they got that lead, they never really had a chance to put their ears back and play with a lead and get after Drew Brees and use that high-powered offense. I mean, what I really noticed was the Saints just played keep away. You know, you'd think it would have been the other way around. Maybe the Eagles would have wanted to play a little more keep away from the Saints because these are two high-powered offenses, but the Saints had the right game plan. Maybe they came up with it ahead of time, or like you even said, maybe they came up with it on the fly. But, you know, read and react, right? Learn and adapt, and they did what they needed to do. So congratulations to them for their first road playoff win in the 40-some-odd year history of that franchise, which is, I don't know if that's a good thing, but congratulations.
Got to break the streak sometime. Also,
that's
a great
right.
job by the defense of holding down Shady McCoy, which I did not see that coming at all. It seemed like Shady just could not get it going, no matter which way he tried to go, you know, left, right, up the middle. The defensive line came to play. Junior Galette, Cameron Jordan, all those guys, they really shut down Shady, and that's really the basis of the Eagles' offense for all the high-flying and the aerial acrobatics. If Shady McCoy gets shut down, then, you know, it's Nick Foles against the world, and that's really not going to work out well for them. The Sunday games, we touched a little bit on San Diego, Cincinnati, and just what in the hell happened there? I still don't know. I actually read your recap. We both have recaps up of Wild Card Weekend on our blog right now, in much less detail, blogspot.com. I actually read your recap after I put mine up. I forgot to check to see if you had one up there. And you wound up saying the exact same thing that I did as far as the San Diego Cincy game. You saw some fear in Andy Dalton, and so did I. He played scared. San Diego figured out that he wasn't going to have the confidence to do what he wanted to do if you just blitz him and put pressure on him. And I don't know if they knew he was going to completely yak like he did, but give San Diego credit for sending the blitz pressure and not letting up and making Andy Dalton wet his pants and eventually, you know, give it up and have no chance of winning the game in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, there had to be, and I didn't obviously count, but there had to be somewhere between 6 and 10 throws that Andy Dalton let go that probably should have been intercepted. I mean, he was just putting in the fourth quarter. He was just putting it up. I mean, I don't even know if he was aiming or what he was doing, but it looked like they were down. It was a manageable lead for the Bengals to try to overcome, but it looked like he was trying to throw the 20-point touchdown pass, and it looked like he was, instead of just staying within himself, staying into the game plan, although I don't know what kind of a game plan you have. You don't game plan for being down 2 touchdowns late. And it just started just looking really – it was sad, I think is the best word for it, because the Bengals are a good team. Their offense put their defense in a bind the whole game. So I'm not going to look at it and blame the Bengal defense for giving up the 27 points. They just had no chance. I mean, they couldn't stay off the field. The Chargers did everything they needed to do. You know, you got to give them the credit. But you don't game plan for the other team's quarterback wetting his pants. You just don't. And Andy Dalton was definitely not ready for prime time in that game. And that's 3 in a row now. That's 3-1 and dones. It's not the kind of reputation you want to earn.
No, he's earned it. He has certainly earned it all the way, no doubt about it. This guy, and you know, and I'm one of his biggest fans. I picked Cincinnati to go to the Super Bowl this year. I obviously had to believe that Andy Dalton was going to step up and break through and be, you know, on an all-pro level this year if they were going to make it to the Super Bowl. And everybody saw glimpses of that. It's not like he was a complete bust all year. It's just that this thing that he pulled Sunday, that he's got this reputation now for pulling once, you know, as a mistake, twice as a trend, and, you know, whatever, three times is. This is what he's known for at the moment. I'm not saying he's never going to break that, but this is him right now. This is when you think of Andy Dalton, you think of get to the playoffs and shit your pants. And like you said, it's not the reputation you want, but that's what he's got. He earned it. I do not know why he decided to play like that in the second half. He had a decent first half. He, you know, he wasn't perfect. He had some throws that were off in the first half too, but he also had some beautiful throws. He had this 49-yard completion of Marvin Jones that I remember, which was followed immediately by, you know, Giovanni Bernard fumbling the ball in the red zone and giving it to the other team. Now, that shouldn't throw you off. That's the mark of a quarterback that doesn't get rattled because, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, et cetera, if their running back turns around and fumbles the ball away, they're not going to let that ruin the rhythm that they have in the game. Tom Brady might curse them out, but they're not going to let it ruin, you know, what they're doing on the field. But it seemed like that ruined Andy Dalton. I don't know if that's the case, but it sure looked like it. He just completely got ruined from that point on.
Well, and the trouble Andy Dalton's going to have is we've seen this recently with two other quarterbacks, and that would be Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan, where you have a couple of playoff failures, and then the next year, everything that you do becomes the yeah, but. And Andy Dalton's now going to experience this for the 2014 season. Nobody's going to care how he looks. If he throws five touchdowns, six touchdowns, if he throws four picks, nobody's going to care what he does in a game because everything is going to go, yeah, but what's he going to do in the playoffs? Peyton Manning goes through this. Even though he's got a Super Bowl title and two Super Bowl appearances, he's done it so many times. He has, even the title hasn't erased that from him, and there's a lot of people thinking right now, hey, the Chargers are going up to Denver, and, you know, Peyton Manning is the great regular season quarterback. He's got the yeah, but, and Andy Dalton's earned himself that. So he gets to live with that for the whole next year, which is going to make it even harder for him if they make the playoffs next year.
He's absolutely right. And San Diego, just like New Orleans with Drew Brees, give them credit for rolling in there with Phillip Rivers and a high-octane passing game and completely altering their game plan and letting their running game take over. We talked a little bit about how they've been mauling people in the run game the last few weeks, and I didn't think it was going to last at all, and neither did you, but it sure did. Ryan Matthews, Danny Woodhead, of all people, even Ronnie Brown got into the act. They just got the job done on the ground. They took our little X factors, our interior defensive linemen, and they gassed them out. They just blew them right up. It ran right past them and right past the linebackers and Vontaze Burfict and everybody else. And the Chargers get the credit for the win, even though Andy Dalton's getting most of the blame right now.
Yeah, and, you know, and I kind of look back, of course, hindsight's 20/20, but we're excited that the Chargers, out of that group of mediocrity, made the playoffs because we, you know, I thought especially that they were the, like I said, they were the most fun team, and they really, honestly, watching that game, it looked like they were having fun. They just looked like they were out there playing. They knew they were playing with house money. Nobody thought they belonged in the playoffs. Sometimes those are the most dangerous teams because they got nothing to lose.
That's right. And they play like they had nothing to lose. They look like it on the field right there. 49ers Packers recap. If you want to hear about that, you're going to have to get the VIP version of this show, the after show version, which is available only on the archives of this show page, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. Or if you want to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, you just go to iTunes, search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and subscribe to the show right then and there. As for our other credits, this broadcast is copyrighted. You can email the show in much less detail at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And I talked about the blog already, where our picks will be for Friday night, and our recaps are up right now, and that's inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. On the other side of the music will be the second part of our show, where we'll talk about Niners, Packers, and whatever else is on our mind. We'll see you on the other side. All right, that brings us into the after-show version of the program where we will talk about the 49ers and the Packers, where the 49ers are 2.5-point favorites and managed to win by 3. Isn't that funny how that works? So what did you see out of this game, Jason?
Well, just quickly before we get to that, I have to ask you one question, honestly.
Yes.
Are you just glad we don't have to pick Chiefs games anymore?
That was the whole point of me picking the Chiefs. I'm done with the Chiefs. I'm finished with the Chiefs.
We don't have to talk about them anymore. We've got 3 more weeks of shows, 4 more weeks of shows of football season, and we don't have to talk about the Chiefs anymore. This has got to be like Christmas for you all over again. No more Chiefs.
No more Chiefs. That was the entire point of me picking the Kansas City Chiefs. I told all you people, I'm picking the Chiefs. I'm ending this shit right now. Their season is over. And they were up 38-10, and their season was still over. I told you people.
Now,
I was ending
the one thing I did. The one thing I did think about that was funny was for people who don't know, you a lot of times we'll do the show, and then you'll call me after the show. And we'll go over, you know, what happened in the show, and we'll talk about other things, and then it really gets wild. That's like the VIP after show.
Right.
But I made fun of your Chiefs pick, you know, cause, and it said, oh, you know, it's going to happen. The Colts are going to win by 1, and it's not enough that they're going to just win by 1. They're going to have to win by 1, and I actually used the term, they have to win in a soul-crushing way. And I went back and listened to the show, and I don't always do that. I went back and listened to the show because I couldn't remember if that made it to air or if that we had said that after the fact. So I remembered sending you the text about 1-point win and soul crushing because it was reiterating the fact that I had already predicted that, but was very disappointed that it didn't make it onto the show. But I assure everybody it did happen. So you predicted... You predicted it would happen, and then I turn around and predict the manner which it's going to happen. It was just a perfect storm of shit, and it was all for you. So if you're going to end the season picking a team and having that much trouble reading a team, that is definitely the way to go. That is the way you want to go out, just sinking with the ship. Captain sinking with the ship. You went right, you and Andy Reid and all those guys just rode that thing right to the bottom, and more power to you for it. But
recap, again. The title of your recap should have been Perfect Storm of Shit, actually. I think that would have been perfect.
Yeah, I just came up with that right now. So, you know, I can always go back and do an edit. But the song you guys were – I put up Blaze of Glory because I just imagined you guys playing that song, the Bon Jovi
I'm
song, as you're sinking with your ship. That's right.
Blaze of Glory.
See, you even got to sing – well, singing on the air, that's great. But the 49ers and the Packers – was like the cherry on top of all of that for you. Because you had in the last few weeks been lamenting about the number of picks that I've won on you by a point or less. So, of course, both your losses against me this week were by a point or less. And, yep, the 49ers were a 2.5-point favorite and managed to kick a last-second field goal to give me a half-point victory, which I ran with it. I'm not giving it back. It's done. The 49ers looked... You know, I was talking to I live in Wisconsin, so a lot of friends are Packer fans, and the one thing that I pointed out to them, and they affirmed it for me because, you know, they were watching it as fans of the team, but you never got the feeling watching that game like the Packers were going to win. You got a feeling that they were hanging in there, and it was like the moral victory, but San Francisco looked like the team that was just going to win the game. And they took the ball on that last drive and you really had that feeling like Green Bay was never going to see the ball again, and they didn't.
And San Francisco had their chance to give the game to Green Bay altogether. Yeah, I agree that San Francisco was looked like the better team all day. And yet there's Colin Kaepernick on the next to last drive, or on the last drive, actually, almost getting intercepted by Micah Hyde, and that would have been it. There was nobody in front of Micah Hyde to be picking that ball off. He's going to the end zone and giving Green Bay a victory. And that's one of those things where there's a lot of pundits. We're going to get to some more of the sports talking heads and the pundits at the end here. I got something to say to them. But they were talking about how San Francisco's team was going to beat Green Bay because they were actually better equipped for the cold. This is all after the fact, by the way. I didn't hear a lot of this before the game, but afterwards. Well, the 49ers are more physical, and they got a better athlete. They got stronger running game. They got stronger defense. They're better equipped for this kind of cold weather than the Green Bay Packers. So, of course, they won the game. And I would like to ask those talking heads, when Colin Kaepernick almost got picked off for a pick six there, were San Francisco better equipped for the cold at that point? Because it looked like Green Bay was pretty damn equipped for the cold, running back to the end zone, taking a 7-point lead. I don't know how much better equipped one team was than the other over the cold. I know San Francisco looked like the better team and therefore deserved to win the game, so I'm not so upset about that necessarily. But just some of the pundits, you know, with this after-the-fact shit just kind of, you know, really eats at me sometimes.
Yeah, some of the post-game was a little annoying with all the slurping they were doing of Colin Kaepernick, and I understand that he played a good game. But the way they were making it sound was that the 49ers went in there and just, you would have thought that this was a 42-3 score, and it was a game that wasn't decided until the very last second. Now, granted, in the last minute and a half, it was really just San Francisco burning the clock because Green Bay had blown their timeouts. They couldn't stop the 49ers. They had several chances. They had some third downs, especially that one where Kaepernick, I think, was a 3rd and 8, I want to say, and he had the long run to get the first down. That made a huge difference in the game because if the Packers stopped them there, they were, I want to say, roughly midfield. That was a punt situation.
Yeah.
But the Packers just broke down. They didn't. I don't know if they didn't have the spy watching for Kaepernick. I don't know why you wouldn't. But as good of a game as Green Bay play called and played, a couple of times they lost contain or just did not pay attention to Kaepernick, and just completely mind-blowing that they would let him, after what he did to them last year in the playoffs, that they wouldn't have a guy watching him.
Yeah, you would think so, but maybe it's because from the first game of this season where maybe they had somebody watching him and he decides to just destroy them in the passing game, throwing for over 400 yards, and Quan Bolden catching, you know, double-digit passes and once again establishing himself as the best possession receiver in football. Perhaps they were just afraid of that. And it doesn't help, of course, that Green Bay had so many injuries on defense that it was just a war of attrition out there. And I think they were just trying to hold on and do whatever they could, you know, regardless of whatever the strategy is. I think the strategy just became to stay healthy, just keep all 11 guys out there on the field and not get hurt, you know, and just try to do the best you can, you know. Sort of like with the Bears playing against the Packers, just, you know, just try not to get destroyed. You know, we don't expect you to actually do well because you're so bad at defense. Just try not to completely lose the game, which is, of course, what they did in the end. So I don't know. I think the Packers were just trying to hold on as hard as they could, and it just wasn't enough in the end. But they gave a valiant effort.
Yeah, and there is no understating, in my opinion, the importance of Michael Crabtree to that San Francisco offense, of having a number one receiver to go, you know, to pair up with Bolden and then to pair up with Vernon Davis in the running game, and then to have that guy that is a matchup problem just about every defense. It's not easy to cover the number of guys that they're rolling out there, and then you got to account for Kaepernick running the ball. And getting Crabtree back, and he's healthy, and he's producing, it's going to make that they are a tough matchup. Should be an interesting game in Carolina this week between those two, because those are very similar teams, very similar the way they're constructed, a lot of defense, running quarterbacks, you know, solid on offense. They can both run the ball. They are very close to being mirror images of each other, strength on strength. Very good. It'd be very exciting game. I think that might be the best overall game. It's probably the closest thing that we're going to have to a defensive game probably, but it's going to be a very fun game to watch, that San Francisco-Carolina game. That's not the one getting all the pub, but that's a very good matchup.
Yeah, San Fran is already ready for Carolina, too. It was hilarious to hear the on-field interviews after the game of Colin Kaepernick and Navarro Bowman, and the only thing on their mind is Carolina. We got to avenge Carolina for coming into our house and beating us early in the year. That little 10-9 loss is still on their minds. So Carolina better be ready, because it sounds like San Fran is coming with everything they got. So in our last few minutes here, I wanted to sort of get into the Baseball Hall of Fame situation. And, of course, we're both baseball fans, but we don't spend a lot of time discussing the Hall of Fame, and I'm not going to speak for you, but I know why I don't talk about it much. I'm pretty much done with it. I don't care. It's, you know, Frank Thomas, I'm, you know, of course, a big White Sox fan. He was a Hall of Famer. I know he was. Whether he got voted in by a bunch of sanctimonious assholes, I know he was a Hall of Fame player because I watched him. You know who else was a Hall of Fame player? Barry Bonds. I don't care what anybody says. That was a Hall of Fame baseball player. That's one of the greatest players of all time. That motherfucker was awesome in everything he did. You can't tell me he wasn't. Roger Clemens was also a Hall of Famer. He's an asshole. I hated him. He's a Hall of Famer, too. I'm so sick of all this crap about the Hall of Fame votes and who deserves it and who gets it and who should decide who gets to go to Cooperstown and who deserves to decide the fate of these guys. Deadspin, the website Deadspin, made a big deal a few weeks ago over buying the ballot of somebody who had a Hall of Fame vote, and so that they could turn that ballot over to the fans of Deadspin so that the fans could have one vote. They could have one ballot for themselves so that it wasn't just, you know, dozens and dozens of old sanctimonious white guys voting on the Hall of Fame. At least one ballot was going to go to some people who don't fit that mold, who aren't just old, musty, and are going to decide on the Hall of Fame based on their moral values, and I decide that this guy doesn't deserve to go because I think he did steroids, even though I'm not completely sure, and all that shit. So it came out today that the person whose ballot they bought was Miami newspaper columnist Dan Le Batard, who's kind of got a reputation of being that guy. He's that guy. He likes to stir things up. He likes to be counterculture. He likes to do things outside the norm because he knows that the norm will get upset about those type of things, and he likes to make the norm upset. He likes to make the status quo upset. And for that, I'm actually a big fan of his. I follow him on Twitter. I listen to his radio show and everything. So I just wanted to get a little chuckle, and I'll turn it over to you for the last 30 seconds or so if you have any comments. I just wanted to chuckle at the fact that Dan Le Batard once again has managed to upset a bunch of stuffy old white people who are so mad that he would sell his ballot, his vaunted Hall of Fame ballot. How can he do such a thing? How can he ruin this thing? Did he? All of you, go fuck yourself. It's a Hall of Fame. It doesn't really matter.
You would think with a Hall of Fame that the fans would have some input. They vote for the All-Star game. You send these guys to the All-Star game enough, you think that the fans understand, and they do a lot of times vote in players where you go, wow, these people actually watch baseball. They actually are voting in the guys that deserve to be there. Now, they'd vote in the names every year, but, yeah, if the fans had a vote, probably a good chance that Bonds would be in, McGuire would be in, Sosa would be good, be in, just because, you know what, they were fun to watch while they were doing it. Yeah, they all cheated, but if they all cheated, they were the best at it. Put them in.
There you go.